Welcome to Series 5 of My Life in Design, brought to you by the DBA and design-focused PR agency Red Setter. I'm Claire Blythe, co-founder of Red Setter. In this series, I'll be speaking to more people who are shaping the world of design, finding out how they discovered that design was a thing you could base a career around, and how they got to where they are today.
This week, I'm here with Kerry Bolt and Sean Byrne of B&B Studio. Kerry is co-founder and leads the client relationships at B&B, and Sean is creative partner and co-founder. Kerry and Sean met when they were at Pearl Fisher and then moved on to set up the award-winning B&B Studio. They work on brands such as Bear, Pip & Nut and Fever Tree. Kerry and Sean, welcome to the podcast.
Nice to be here.
Thanks so much for coming on. Sean, should we start with you about when did you first realise design was a thing you wanted to do?
Quite late, I think. I was at secondary school doing it was O-levels in those days. So I was doing O-levels, and I'd sort of just scraped through with an art O-level, was just going on the normal sort of journey to take A-levels, didn't really know what I wanted to do, was going to take economics and history is what I took. And then it was like I needed to do another A-level. So it was like, well, I quite like, I'd always loved drawing. I'd always loved doing that. So I just took my third one was art.
And you did it like an extra thing.
It was an extra thing. It was like, you know, sit down with my parents and I'm like, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. But I think, and they'd be like, well, you quite like doing that. Why don't you do that? So I took, and the thing was, I only just scraped an O-level at art. So I wasn't even that good at drawing. I just enjoyed it.
That's really interesting.
And so then I did A-levels, and actually that's where probably I started to sort of really love art, less design, but more sort of drawing, that sort of thing. And then did really well during my A-levels at art. And I sort of naturally, I didn't know anything about the design industry or anything like that. I didn't see it necessarily as a career path, but I sort of almost feel like it was one of the few choices that I had. So I was thinking about, do I want to be an architect or something like that? And I was told in careers meetings that could be a choice, but then I'd spend 7 years studying that, and that didn't sound like a lot of fun. So I did a foundation course in Essex, near to where I was brought up. And during that, again, sort of still didn't really know about design. And I think I wasn't pushed into anything or asked about it, but it was kind of more like every time it was another step of like, well, you could go to college and do a design course. So I went down to, I got in at Brighton. It was Brighton Polytechnic then. Yeah. And I sort of went there because I love Brighton. Yeah, it was about the only place that I actually visited, I think. And so again, it was like I wasn't passionate about doing it. I just sort of fell into it, I suppose.
And that age, a lot of
I just really didn't know what to do, what I was doing, where it was. I mean, I was sort of advised not even to go to Brighton because it was very illustrative, and they were like, you're not the greatest illustrator, but you know, you're quite, there's just some design qualities there, so maybe, you know, do a different course. And I didn't want to go to London because I thought I wouldn't be good enough to, and maybe London was too scary. Mm-hmm. But I loved Brighton, and I think I spent three years there just loving Brighton and probably not doing a lot of work on the course, if I'm honest.
Okay, so fair enough.
But it sort of scraped through on the design course and came out of that. And like, again, even after doing a degree in design, I'm not sure I didn't really understand the design industry. Didn't know what, I just knew that I probably had to move to London to try and find a job.
Yeah, I didn't know the design industry was a thing and was there.
No.
Sort of uncovered it naturally.
Yeah, right? Well, it's, yeah, probably uncovered it really more than anything. And I was very, I suppose I look back on it all and probably quite fortunate. We had Sean Dew, who was at the Partners design agency at the time, came and set us a project. And there were a few of us did this project, and she picked up on a few of the projects that, you know, we did, and offered like a handful of us like little internships to after we'd graduated. And I got offered one of those. And that was probably the first little step and that little connection that brought me to yeah. London. I knew I could move to London. So it was around 1992, I suppose. So quite a while
Perfect
ago.
Agencies joy at the time.
Partners. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was amazing. An absolutely amazing experience. It was like how I imagined a design agency would really be. It was really quiet and everyone was really looked like they were thinking hard. Do you know what I mean? There was a little coffee machine, a smell of coffee in there, and it was kind of, yeah, it was an amazing studio. But I suppose on the back of getting that placement, I tried to get in at other places, knew I had that lined up, and got internship at Design Bridge for the month before. So actually before I went to the partners, I met Rod Petrie there, and they were amazing. I was only there a month, and I was in the football team, and they were so it was amazing yeah. experience, and it was a really good time. And then I left there. They'd already hired juniors, so I was sort of in there just doing that internship. Went to the partners and had an amazing experience there. But while I was at Design Bridge, I was given a name of somebody who was at Lewis Mobley, a woman called Kasia Rust, who was mm-hmm. in charge of kind of the internships there, and interviewed with her, and she offered me an internship for when I finished at the partners. So I was sort of rolling from one internship to another, and you get to know, it's really hard, you get to know people, you just work out how they like their tea, what the name is, you know, where everything is, and then you leave to go to the next one. You have to be so nice to everyone all the time. It's really, really hard work. And I suppose it's those connections, you know. If I hadn't been at Design Bridge, I wouldn't have got that name of Kasia, who was at Lewis Mobley. And then after I'd done the partners, I went to Lewis Mobley, and while I was at the partners as well, Turner Duckworth was just setting up, and they were advertising for a junior. So it was back in the day when Design Week was a thing, and the little publication, and that was about that was the thing that you were taught to look in, and it had all the industry news. It was really, really great publication. It was 92. It was a tough time. There weren't many jobs around, and I remember seeing their little ad appear, and he'd only just set up, Bruce. So I went for an interview there while I was at the partners, I remember, and then that sort of followed through to my time at Lewis Mobley, because I was doing a good internship. I think I was doing well while I was at Lewis Mobley, and then got offered a job right at the back end of 92 with Bruce while I was at Lewis Mobley. And I think that kind of pushed them into sort of saying, well, actually, at Lewis Mobley, we'll offer you. And they kind of tried to, so they sort of matched it. And I think that, so again, even just getting that opportunity at Bruce's place, although, albeit I didn't know Bruce at all, and you know, I look back now, what an amazing what an amazing agency, what an amazing man and designer Bruce is. But he was just him and a company just literally set up. I went for an interview, and they were just some chairs and a couple of tables and the freelance artwork, who I think it was. So that was a bit of a risk, whereas Lewis Mobley was an established agency, amazing reputation, and so then that sort of prompted, I think, almost Mary to offer me a job at Lewis Mobley, and I never sort of looked back from there, really. That was an amazing time. But I sort of look at that thread, and it was very fortunate, very much about the people that I met on the way.
Yeah.
And trying to just keep my head up when I was on those internships, because they were brilliant, but it was hard work. It was very manual in those days as well. Not really computers. It was, everything was cut out and stuck on and spray mounted. And it was an amazing time. Yeah, it was an amazing time. But
Let's go back to the Lewis Mobley experience. So, Kerry, tell me, how did you get into the whole thing? How did you start in design?
Yeah, so I always wanted to be a designer.
Right, okay.
So I think, remember, sort of 13 doing sort of art and design. And I've followed sort of the graphics art, and I also followed sort of design technology. So
even at that age.
Wow. Yeah, I did both. So I was one of those people that always thought I knew what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I did GCSEs in art and design, and it was always that balance at the time of, you need some other academic ones as well. You couldn't always do all the creatives at that time.
How did you know there was a job there? It never entered my head at that age that it existed.
Well, as a designer, I suppose, I assumed there was a job.
Yeah, that's true.
But I didn't as a graphic designer or design technology. So that was the other aspect for me. So it was a bit more kind of design and production, probably more sort of technical skills in that sense. So I knew there were jobs, but I didn't exactly know probably what they were.
Yeah.
But it was a little bit unusual at the time where in schools, they weren't advocating too creative. So you had to do two GCSEs in those sorts of things. It was almost like, well, that's enough for you. You need the English and the maths and the languages and this, that and the other. So I followed both of those at GCSE, thinking that I would be a designer, graphic designer.
Yeah.
And then I did both of those at A-levels as well and did English as the other late A-level, thinking I was better at graphics. And then you apply while you're doing A-levels to go on foundation. So it's like, oh, I'm going to go on foundation and then I'll probably go to, or maybe go to university, I don't know. But then when I was on foundation, prior to that, you get your A-level results. And I suppose it slightly shocked me that I wasn't as good at graphics and I was better at design technology. I was on a foundation course for art. So it was when I was on that course that it sort of dawned on me that maybe I wasn't the best designer. And maybe I shouldn't, I didn't want to go down the design technology route. And, but I loved designers. So I loved working in creative. So I was at art college.
Yeah.
I was at Portsmouth Art College at the time. And I loved being around creatives. But to have that sort of thought that I didn't want to be a designer anymore was a little bit of a shock. I was on this track of design and what else am I going to do?
Yeah, that's what you wanted to do.
Yeah, exactly. So I remember sort of being about 19, I suppose, on art foundation and then really going to the library because that's what you did then and kind of investigating were there other courses that I could do at university that meant it was design plus something and I didn't know what that was. So I remember seeing there was graphic design with business. That was the sort of courses. And then there was one course called design management that caught my eye. And there was one course in Farnham and there was one course in Leicester at the time that both had design management. And I thought they sound interesting. They seem more varied. And I suppose from a design point of view, whilst I liked the creative side of it, I always felt I was a little bit better at the research or a little bit better at the theory of it and the thinking about it more than the doing of it.
Yeah.
And that really was my journey.
My head wouldn't have been in that space at all. That's really well planned out, really well thought through. That's really
in theory. But I was desperately researching, thinking I want to be around creatives. I like this environment.
Yeah.
But how can I fit in, I suppose, and what does that mean? And maybe if I had another little string to my bow, that maybe that would be the best route to take. So I went to interview at De Montfort, which was the Leicester course at the time. And that to me was huge. It was massive for university and it felt not very creative to me.
Really?
Because it was lots of other things as well. I imagine you could study maths there and English there and do other things. I didn't really know, but it didn't feel very art to me. So I went to Farnham and interviewed there. And it was a much smaller course. It was only like 30 people on the course, but it was within an art college. So that's what it was. So you had textile designers and animators and graphics, as well as you had this one weird course, which was design management. And that was the weird, that was the anomaly within what was a creative campus.
That's exactly what you wanted,
Yeah. So that's kind of how I sort of found my way to do design management at university, which makes sense now.
And then how did you get your first job? What was the, you have internships again in a similar thing, or is it more going straight into a job?
Not really. It was, again, it wasn't really what I didn't really know what the roles were. So I didn't really know how to get into that side of it if you weren't a designer. So I basically applied to I probably applied to design agencies, but didn't get anywhere. But what I ended up doing was I found it was a government run initiative called Business Link, who basically worked with a lot of different small businesses to help them in different areas. So they had design function, marketing function, finance function, all the different functions you need within a business.
Yeah.
And anyway, I applied to the kind of CEO of that and, you know, wrote out, you know, handmade my letterhead and wrote, wrote to him and sort of said what I'd done. And he was like, come in for an interview. And he said, well, you can kind of shadow the design lead in this company called Business Link, which was government run. And you can be a project manager and support all the different functions, a bit like a project manager. I worked with marketing, I worked with finance, whatever they needed in a very lo-fi project management way. And then through that, they offered me, I was allowed to do a course, a training course, and I went to the training course that the DBA were running for a week. At the time ran like a week training course. And then on that course, I met lots of different account directors and from Brown Inc. at the time. And I basically then met one of the account directors who was looking for, you know, her current account exec was leaving. And would I come in for an interview?
Brilliant.
And that's how it started.
Again, about connections, all about
connections. Yeah.
About that.
Exactly. But it's all about it, depending on who you meet on that journey and somebody gives you a name.
Yeah.
And I remember following up with a lady called Joanna Anthony, who was at Brown Inc. And that's how I... So that was the journey. So
the training course was in account management at design agencies that the DBA ran.
Yeah, it was. I think it was called Professional Practice in Design Consultancy or something like that.
Yeah, okay.
But basically, it was all different modules. And I think there was like half-day modules across the week. So, and I was fortunate enough to kind of be on it all. And I think at the time, each of those account directors basically did a different module. So I met quite a lot of the team through it. So yeah, that was the sort of, it was a real stepping stone, almost like to sort of move to London with the first job and get into that sort of environment. And then really it was about the kind of happy accident of being able to go on a training course and then getting that first in, if you like, into an agency.
And that was your first job then in Brown Inc.?
Sort of second job, really,
second job,
but first job
first
in design.
Job in.
Yeah, Brown Inc., yeah.
Oh, interesting. That's what I'm really interested to talk to you about it, because there haven't been as many people on the podcast that show the side, the account management and the running a company side of a design agency.
Yeah, so I think
it's good to...
Yeah, through that, I think you get... I suppose I didn't know either, but I suppose you start as an account exec and you're working with an account director that knows what they're doing and you're learning as you go. And obviously I've got a background in kind of, in, you know, being a fan of design and liking design, but I suppose that you've got that sort of, I suppose, project management skills, if you like, that you're then applying. And I think it's all about the opportunities you're given. So I worked with the MD there at the time was Pete Hollingsworth, who kind of headed up the client side of it, but equally Dave Brown. And I think what, you know, that fostered really in that agency was really interest, like really great people to work with.
Yeah.
All quite young at the time. When I look back, I think how young the kind of agency was, but, you know, working very closely with creatives who become friends.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of my friends are creatives.
Yeah.
Just because you have those close relationships. And I suppose you're learning at the same time as they're learning. They might be juniors or designers or design directors. And, you know, at the time you're just forging those relationships. And I think it got to sort of, I don't know, 40, 50 people within that agency, and they become the connections that then go off onto other, into other agencies. And then your network grows like that. So I was there 4 years, I think, at Brown, and that changed over time and eventually became, I think it eventually became Super Union, but now is Design Bridger Partners.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's, that's quite an evolution that went on.
God,
over that time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a completely different company now. But so what, after that, is that what you went to Pearl Fisher, or was that?
After that, I went to Pearl Fisher, yeah. And I remember, again, I suppose the connections side of things, I remember thinking, right, what next post-Brown? Interviewed actually at Williamsbury Ham, and not dissimilar, you did get an offer at Turner Duckworth, but I didn't get an offer at Williamsbury Ham. I didn't get that job that I went for there.
Yeah.
But there was a lady called Kelly Chappell, who's now, I think, Bulletproof. And Kelly was really good friends with Rochelle Martin at the time, who was at Pearl Fisher. And Kelly put her, sort of recommended me to Rox, as she's known, at Pearl Fisher. So I then interviewed with Rox and then ended up getting the job at Pearl Fisher. So again, one door closes. You don't get into Williamsbury Ham. another opens, you get a lead into Pearl Fisher. And I remember that being quite an intense interview process, actually.
At
Pearl Fisher, yeah.
What was it like?
Just quite intense in terms of the different rounds and the different people you met along the way. But good interview, but just quite sort of intense. And then, and then I was at Pearl Fisher for 6 years. And that's where Sean and I met.
That's how you met Sean, Should we, John, should we talk a bit about Lewis Mobley and your experience there, and then we talk a bit more about Pearl Fisher together, really?
Yeah.
How was it? Well, how long were you at Lewis Mobley for?
5 years I was there.
Well,
so first job, amazing place. It was such a great team that was there, you know, and obviously no experience, no real understanding. I'd done those internships, but no real understanding of what an agency, sort of how it worked, or lots of experience from the agencies. But I think Mary was an incredible creative director for me at that time. You know, I think if I went back now, if I chose a first job, I couldn't have chosen a better first job. It was, you know, the way sort of she ran the studio and projects and you know, that love of creativity, the love of a big idea and the craft that she had and got from all the teams. Well, it was an incredibly talented team.
Yeah.
Very diverse, actually, very international. There were lots of people from very different backgrounds, which I always thought was really impressive, and sort of look back. And I think during our time at Pearl Fisher and even now at B&B, I think it is about trying to get people with different backgrounds and different, you know, if you've got different stories behind you, then you know, you think and work in a different way. And
definitely.
I think that's what, I think that helped there. But yeah, Lewis Mobley was really good. It was like a real college for me in a lot of ways. Probably what I hadn't necessarily learnt at Brighton, then I learnt a lot from Mary and the way she ran jobs and that team there. But that was a really amazing experience. It was very much about the big idea.
Yeah.
There was a nice sort of competitiveness amongst the design team, but a sort of togetherness at the same time. It was a really, really good sized studio.
And
I look back, I met some amazing people. I look back very fondly on that.
Yeah, she was talking about that because we did a podcast, recorded a podcast last week actually with Mary, about that sort of healthy competition, what she gets from it, from even being competitive with herself,
kind
of get better at things.
Yeah, I mean, there needs to be that competitiveness, but you need to also be able to work well as a team. And I think certainly what we look for in team members, designers going forward, is that, I want them to be, you know, passionate about what they're doing, but equally sort of come together and build something as a team. But yeah, great. That was a really good experience. I think it just I've not had many jobs, but 5 years, it just felt like I needed a new challenge.
Yeah, fair.
And hence why I was looking for something else and moved to Pearl Fisher, in 97. Well, and Pearl Fisher was relatively small then. It was quite sort of still a little bit perhaps unknown.
Was it? How many people were there?
10, 12 people when I joined.
Oh, really? Was it similar timings around?
No, I joined about 5 years later.
Kerry's a little younger than me.
I talked about GCSEs.
But it was... It was good. What was great about, I suppose, the Pearl Fisher type sort of opened my eyes up to other roles. It was the first time I was very much like a designer at Lewis Mobley, and I would just, it was like I had sketch pads on the go, because again, it was still pre computers, and it was just like just sitting at your desk thinking and drawing and.
What sort of brands were you working on?
There was a lot of drinks stuff in the studio, which was really good. There was a lot of private label, own label at the time. We did a lot of Halford stuff and stuff for Boots, and that was really, I think that was almost its heyday, really. So own label, it was really really prominent. There was lots of really good, that was sort of almost like, for me, a brilliant way of cutting your teeth as a designer, because those projects were always looking for little ideas and things like that. So that was great to work on. And it was a few little startups, but it was a lot of big brand stuff as
really good.
But like I said, it's really manual, you know, we use airbrushing.
Wow.
Doing stuff like that, cleaning spray booths, you know, it was proper manual stuff. I suppose it was like, I would say it was proper apprenticeship stuff, you know, where it was, which I really enjoyed. I think I liked always like the manual stuff as well, the cutting and pasting and making, and it is, you have to be quite disciplined. But you would do a lot of late nights as well. There was, but I think that bonds you as a team, actually.
Yeah, I agree.
Because you sort of all, you all end up sort of rolling your sleeves up and getting on with it together, and you sort of connect, and those people that you work with just do become your friends because you're spending all day with them and all night with them as well. And it's amazing how that connects you like that, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
And that again leads to other, you know, you find those people that you sort of really love and like, and that's how you meet those other people in the industry. I think it's a very connected industry in that way, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, most of my best friends now are people I used to work with.
Yeah.
Different agencies. And
And you don't have to have a wild personality, I don't think, to get on. Yeah, I think you just have to be genuinely as nice as you can be to people, or treat people as you would want to be treated yourself. And I think that's what grows good relationships and connections and makes people want to get in touch with somebody else and say, do you know what? I recommend it. I haven't got a job for this person, but you might have, and they're really great. And yeah, I think that helps.
Yeah. Definitely. I think the wild personality thing is a really interesting point. I think it's easy to assume that you might have to have.
I think creative industry, there's still a lot of egos and you know, but you don't have to be wild and crazy to get on. I think you just actually have to be, if you're smart and hardworking and you have the right personality.
Definitely.
Just, you know, just be being yourself, I think, is really important.
Yeah.
That there's room for lots of different types of people.
Yeah, I completely agree. So tell me about Pearl Fisher. What's the, 10, 12 people, obviously now there's 3-4 offices worldwide.
Yeah.
I think
what it's being at, you know, I never felt like I needed to jump around and go to lots of different agencies, because I think I was challenged fully at Lewis Mobley because I was really learning about design for the first time. I think college sort of set me up a little bit, but wasn't like Lewis Mobley really gave me that sort of education in design, I think, and graphic design. But Pearl Fisher, I think I joined just at the right time for me. So the challenges and me growing as the company grew. First time I'd worked with a strategist, first time I'd really worked with client service team. Because we were sort of at Lewis Mobley, it was very much this sort of design team held together, and that I weren't really exposed to other sides of the business. And Pearl Fisher, I suppose, gave me that opportunity to see those other sides of the business and work with different people, not just the designers. And I joined there to just run a like tiny little team of a couple of designers. And again, that was something I was really interested in, working with younger designers and building a team and growing it in that way. And I got to see some of the, you know, finance side of a business and, you know, doing people's review. I suppose learning how to sort of almost run a design business to a degree. But it was, again, still such a good time that I worked with so many amazing people there that, you know, some of which I was responsible for sort of getting in and recruiting alongside partners, but some brilliant time again.
Yeah.
You know, when a business is sort of starting to grow, there was an energy in it that I seen here as well as we've been growing this, but there was an energy at Pearl Fisher at that time that was really exciting. It was very young people.
Yeah.
Not just young people,
not
but
similar to Brown. And like for me, there was lots of young people and good energy.
Yeah.
And you really learned, you know, you're all kind of in it together. And I thought I'd never get that again when I was at Brown. I thought, oh, I'm leaving somewhere that's got this really lovely people, really good people, good at what they do, good energy, good friends. I'm leaving all that. Am I ever going to get that again? And I'm the same, Sean. I got that again at Pearl Fisher. I feel very lucky and fortunate that you're surrounded by like-minded people who were very good at what they did and were very like good energy, good people.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's from a B&B point of view what we wanted to create here. And I don't think you can't set out to create that. I think you have to do the right recruitment. You have to
you have to
put the right people together to enable that to happen. But I think both of us are fortunate now, obviously, to work here and grow this team, but sort of foster that same sort of environment.
Yeah.
Good people who work well together. And, you know, so that's,
it works.
Very fortunate.
I think, you have, you know, recruitment is a is obviously a big part of, you know, creating that culture. And
yes.
You don't want to recruit everyone to be the same either. So it's how you get that balance of different people and how that they blend then together. I think, you know, I think what the partners at Pearlfish did very well is recruited a sort of senior team that was still quite young, that then recruited, you know, more behind them that were, again, brought that energy and that youthful creativity. Yeah, it was a really lovely time. I think, again, for me, I just grew with the agency as the agency grew. So it was just like perfect. I didn't feel like I'd reached the ceiling at any point. It was always something there. And I think that's where I got more involved, was kind of bringing interviewing a lot, bringing graduates in trying to get the right people in. It wasn't, I didn't always find it that easy. We were over in West London, Pearlfish, it was in Holland Park.
Yeah, it's not the centre.
And it's not Clerkenwell, it's not Soho. And that's where I'd sort of been sort of brought up as a designer, and that's where all the designers wanted to go. And then you're out in sort of sleepy Holland Park, and it was always quite interesting how you'd sort of try and get the best talent. But over the years, I think as the reputation was built creatively, it got easier and easier to sort of drag people over to
sleepy
West London to to work. But yeah, it was just a lot of adrenaline, I always felt, from being there. The work that you'd work on, the work was important, but actually I used to get up and get quite excited to see the team.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's what you want, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
And that recruitment point's really interesting, that I think it's really easy to know the theory of recruitment of you want the best people, you want a mixed background, you want all this really good stuff. But then when you've got a role to fill, just think, we'll get them in for now and then we'll go buying with that.
I've always felt it's very difficult. I'm used to looking at portfolios and visual, people's books and stuff. And I was, I find it really difficult for Kerry, when she's got, you look at a CV and you've got to sit down and talk to someone, and you don't have the projects to talk about, or the visual stuff, the ideas, that it's like
very CV intangible, and, isn't
yeah.
it? You're talking about people. It. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is about, talking to what their passions are. And, often a lot of them do have a creative side where interest, if you like. They might have done similar to what I've done. Or they might have even been a designer, actually kind of followed it all the way through and said, actually, I'm going to get a design degree and then I'm going to change.
But
it is. It's the same with strategy. When you're interviewing, really, it's about talking about how they think and what their sort of passion points are, I suppose. And the same within client service.
Yeah, it's the same as what we do with the PR side of it. I need to see people have got a passion for design, the passion for talking about it and writing about it.
Yeah, it isn't functional. I think that's the thing. It's sort of, I think the way we recruit, it's not, if you're particularly strong in finance, that's fine.
Yeah.
But actually, you need the kind of more sort of empathy and appreciation of the creative that's going on. There's so much to the role, and you're not just, I sort of say, you're not just pushing paper around.
Yeah.
You have to have a real passion for the output. I think that's what we've always done, I suppose, through as a designer, you have the passion for the output, but actually everyone in the agency does have the passion for the output.
Yeah.
And the input that everyone does that output is important as well. It isn't just about being a facilitator and sort of passive facilitator, really, and say, oh yeah, at the end it'll be okay.
Yeah.
It's about your, what you can bring to that.
Yes, definitely.
Output.
Yeah, interesting. That's you were both at Pearlfisher for 5-6 years together. And then what made you think, I'm going to start my own thing and start B&B Studio?
Yeah, the agency had become Pearlfish had an amazing reputation. It was big in London for, suddenly like 55 people or something. And I think New York had grown to 25, something like that. And so it's become quite successful. There was a really good senior team there. And I think Kerry and me just felt like we needed a new challenge. Like, we'd been part of this and very proud of everything that was up Pearlfish and everything we'd achieved, but I think we just needed something new. It was actually a really interesting time 15 years ago, because I think economically it was a little bit more sort of tough. It was again, it's sort of a bit of another one of those recession things.
2009, yeah, absolutely.
That's 2009, yeah. And so there was a lot of things setting up. There was really, we always talk about recessions as those sort of new shoots of new things come out of it. And I suppose that was that was maybe there was a bit of that in our thinking, that actually we wanted to try something new and start up something. But I guess as well, it was maybe just the opportunity to get back to doing it right at, you know, grassroots level for us almost again, you know, and get right our hands dirty. And I think that new challenge and starting it and doing something our way, not necessarily trying to make it do it better, but I think we always felt like we could, we just wanted to put our fingerprint on it, I suppose, a bit more and do it. And I was excited by the idea of doing something smaller again, I think, and something quite almost boutique, really, and getting back to the real creative. You know, we were both used to sort of flying around the world and doing, you know, like big global projects. And I think there was an appetite from both of us at the age and level we were at, just actually getting back into the nitty gritty.
And I think we had we were given a lot of free rein, I suppose, an opportunity at Pearl Fisher to actually, you know, we worked very closely together. You know, you'd be making decisions together on things.
Yeah.
And I suppose in a way we were sort of slightly, in a way we were able to slightly test how it would work, you know. And I think that's the thing. You don't always find somebody that you feel, yes, this is the right person to set up with, you know.
Yeah.
You know, there's a conversation, I can't just set up as a client service director. What am I going to do? Just have a load of account managers, you know.
you need design, you need creative.
That's the heart of it. And I suppose we were fortunate enough to be able to work together closely and then think.
I think on that, I think when I left college, I just assumed that all agencies were just lots of designers all got together. And I think Pearl Fisher really opened my eyes up to other roles within each agency.
No,
and I think, you know, I don't think I could have ever set up, a B&B with another designer. I think I really understood, it's always been really important, the sort of client service side of it and particularly strategy as well, and seeing the importance of those roles.
I think it doesn't cross over. I think that's the other thing as well. It's, you know, it's quite clear what your roles are.
Yeah.
It's really, you know, I think a lot of the, you know, if two designers set up, I think there's often a bit of a lean as to one person takes a bit more of the management of the business maybe, and the other one, you know, carries on creative. I don't know. But it feels like with us, the roles are quite clear. And so that's, again, another
thing.
Well,
I mean, you say that.
I know, I say that. We're all creative, aren't we? We all have ideas.
Still wants to be a designer.
I think that's the way projects work, though. It's very collaborative. You know, they're, it's not just the designer's side. Just, you know, client service,
that's
strategy,
great.
You know, when you put a team in a room from all those different disciplines, but we're all making, helping mold that work, the project, whatever, and the direction it's going. It's not just the designer sitting in there.
No,
that's really important.
Yeah.
I touched on that earlier, didn't we, that I really don't like the terms of creatives and non-creatives within an agency, because everyone should contribute in that way.
I think that's the input. That's
much better.
Yeah, that's what I said about interviewing, you know, is people who've got a passion to be involved in the work, I suppose, and to be able to contribute. Yes, have the eye, you know, of the client in mind, but equally have a view that helps. And that view can still be wrong. It doesn't matter. I mean, Sean's very good at inviting conversation. You know, what do you think? What do you think? You know, and it can be still not the direction it goes in, but it helps you form a view on it. So, yeah, I think from us, you know, setting up sort of, beginning of 2009, it felt like there was the opportunity at that time to start smaller again. As Sean's, you know, said, it was a recession, so it was difficult. It wasn't an easy time.
Absolutely.
But a lot of agencies do start in a recession, weirdly. Or brands start, you know, people looking to do slightly different things.
I think Pearl Fisher did, actually. I think in 92 is when it started, when I graduated. That's when Pearl Fisher, and again, that was a sort of recession year. So, you know, it's amazing that sort of cycle of, how things begin sometimes.
I think COVID's made a big difference.
Tough
times. Lots of people have started small agencies during that period.
Yeah.
They've been laid off from big ones and all that kind of stuff.
But
it encourages it. Mm. But so tell me about B&B Studio. What did you do? Did you get a studio together? Did you work from home? What's the beginnings?
Yeah, we worked out our flats for about a month whilst we were kind of
trying to get a studio space, but our first studio was just off Hoxton Square.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was like a room. And yeah, it was us two and an intern to begin with, and then freelance. So that's what, kind of how we kind of developed. So I think we sort of do look back and say this, but, you know, we were used to managing teams and we were used to having probably a slightly bigger team. You know, I'd never worked with Sean as a designer, you know, and we're kind of going sort of back to that, if you like.
Yeah.
But I think we quickly grew to sort of 8-10 people within sort of 18 months. But I think we always knew we wanted it to be more than us. It wasn't just Sean and I for a while, you know.
It was about
building it almost as a bit of a setup that we were used to, of how it would work. Yeah, so we started with a studio in Hoxton Square, and then, you know, it is about the kind of clients and the connections that you get. I mean, for us, we were used to working in a lot of global brands and flying around the world, but actually what it did spawn was a lot of startups when we first started. So first time...
do that? How did you get in touch?
I think it's a bit of those connections again, isn't it? It's like we've done a lot of work with the Innocent Smoothie brand at Pearl Fisher, and there were people that worked there that sort of, again, they had that entrepreneurial spirit. I think that's how they recruited us.
Yeah.
And there were people that we'd sort of met or come in contact with that then left Innocent and were setting up something, heard that we'd set up, and got in touch. And it kind of, I think our first sort of half dozen clients all seemed to be sort of somehow connected or had heard about us setting up and were creating something. Usually food and drink, we do a lot of work in food and drink, don't we? So
is that where Bear came from?
So Bear was our first client. They got in touch. I mean, they would actually have liked to have used a nice big agency, but couldn't afford it. An agency,
excellent,
a proper agency. So, so they were happy to use me and Kerry and an intern. But, you know, that was that, yeah, again, just sliding doors moments, I suppose, of that client getting in touch. And
yeah, I think Bear was our first client. Obviously, we weren't called Bear at the time, but
what were they called?
Urban Fresh Fruit.
Oh, okay. So you renamed them, and
yeah,
we went to the Grand Prix at DBAs for that work.
Yeah, so which was a very memorable night. Yeah, but it was good. But Bear was our first client, but they're called Urban Fresh Fruit. They obviously came in. Hayley and Andrew were the founders, and I think for us, reconnecting with people who are really at the heart of the businesses that we were working with was quite a different thing as well. I think we've always sort of tried to maintain this model at B&B where we have the startups and work with really closely with the founders of the medium-sized businesses, which are often still founder-led, but they're sort of scaled up, if you like.
They could be,
you know, much, much bigger as a client. And then you've got the big clients still, which is our background. That's what you grew up with, and that's what we know in terms of
Fevertree and stuff like that.
They're still founder-led.
They're still founder-led.
I mean, Tim's still involved, but it's more the kind of Nestle's or the Diageo's, which are the bigger clients, where you're working with a team of marketeers and design leads.
Yeah,
but it's quite different to working with the kind of startups and the founders. And I think that we sort of have that sort of agility, if you like, to work across all those different types of businesses, and they are really different. But we haven't been necessarily used to that. I mean, came closest to it, I think, with the Innocent founders who are involved in that business. But, you know, when you work sitting at opposite, you know, founders who've got a lot more intuition.
Mm. But you do take on a sort of almost a teaching role, because these are people often with no marketing background, no skills in branding or design, and they're coming to you because they've got a product or a problem they think they've solved. So they're coming to you to help them, and so you really do handhold, don't you, through the process. And it's very different, but it's incredibly exciting, and it really collaborative, because you really feel like you're partnering with them to make something a success.
So Bear, they had the dried fruit and the yo-yo idea.
Well, they had the yo-yo idea, but then we created, you know, the name and the identity and helped them structurally with the packaging and, you know, tone of voice and everything for them. And it's, very proud of that bit of work, because it's still going strong now, sort of 15 years later.
But I think it's fascinating to meet, you know, like Sean said, really, you're really guiding them, because you don't know what a skill set is when they walk through the door. I mean, someone like Pippa, Pippa Nutt, you know, she came in, you know, with an idea and some product that she'd been testing at a market, you know, for the nut butters. And we're sitting opposite thinking, well, this is, you know, she's great as a person. It sounds really good, interesting product, really interesting story. How do we then make in this brand, Pippa Nutt, that it now is, but again, similar to Bear, it is the brand positioning, it is the strategy behind it, it is the name, and it is all the creative that goes alongside. And I suppose having those brands allow you the freedom creatively to actually help take it in different directions. And I think for us, you know, we're privileged in a way to meet all these sort of founders and entrepreneurs at the beginning of their journey and to be able to help them and go on that journey with them and see how it goes. And it's fascinating to kind of play a small part in it and see how it grows. And I've seen Pippa Nutt's done super well.
Definitely. Quite a large part in my eyes. It's the stuff you see, isn't it? It's the...
Yeah, definitely.
The product's got to be there, but...
Definitely.
You'd be able to buy it.
And those people grow, you know, that's the thing. You know, Pippa comes in and then where she is now, you know, and everything that she's involved with. So, yeah, it's fascinating to sort of go on that journey and see how they develop and grow as brands and as people, I think.
So. Yeah, definitely. That sort of, it's an extra element of the creativity.
I think it's the people as well. It isn't you know, we get to see those people behind the brands. I think there's, you know, those big brands, the dots. You don't really get that from them, do you? Whereas these smaller brands, you know, we get to see those people that come in and their personalities and what their passions are. And it's an exciting part of what we do, I think.
Yeah. I was going to ask about how you inspire yourselves creatively, but is it through, do you have like specific ways of doing it, or is it through sort of the people you're working with and the team?
I think for me, it is all around us. I suppose I'll go back to kind of me always wanting to be in a creative environment, I suppose, going to art college and being around creatives. I have to necessarily have to do the creative myself, but it's about being around. And I suppose we're fortunate enough, it's all around us. So you get kind of inspired by the people you meet, whether it's the brands and the ideas that they've got, or the kind of challenge that you've got in front of you on a project. You're inspired then by the team and how they approach it. So you're inspired day to day creatively. I think that's from my perspective.
Yeah. No, I think that's the same. I think, you know, seeing young designers create stuff and I think we get a lot out of sort of being in the studio and seeing people, you know, excel at what they do. I think that's really, really, and probably the bit that I wouldn't have realized until we started B&B was just, the people we meet, some of those founders, I think they're quite inspiring. Some of the things that they're, you know, definitely passionate about and do, and the drive and the perspiration that they have to put in to get to where they want to do, I think can be quite inspiring for us.
I think the point about young people is really important. And I think before I started doing this podcast, I've always had more of a hierarchical structure in my head of what design agents, I mean, I've worked in many design agencies, but what they're like, maybe the ones I've worked in were more like this, where you've got the senior designers and the junior designers didn't have much of a say in anything. But the people I've interviewed on the podcast so far, it's so strongly come through that young people are the lifeblood of the agency and really, really important. I think that's a...
Yeah, definitely. I think they are. I think creatively, it was always a level play. Even at, you know, Lewis Mobley, it was a level play. You know, you sat around the table and put your ideas down. It didn't matter whether you were design director or junior designer, if your idea was the right one. And Mary recognised that, then you know, yours was the idea that got shown to client. And there wasn't a problem with that. I think, it's fair. We try and keep it pretty even here, don't we, in terms of like, I think everyone has a voice, everyone's voice should be heard. And
I think a lot of people who come in sort of say, oh, it's a young team, you know, and it is, you know, across the board, quite a young team.
You need that blend, don't you? You need that blend of youth and experience. And I think it's getting that, you know, same way that you need different personalities. I think, you know, good studio environment is one where you've got young, it's called young people, but you've got the younger ones bringing the fresh thinking, hopefully. And then you've got the experienced ones being knowing how to sort of mold that into something really great. So, and, you know, and again, you need you know, I learned so much when I was younger off the older ones, and sometimes you don't even appreciate it until you're older.
Yeah, but, of course.
But, you know, again, you need that blend of the two.
Yeah, I think it's a collaboration as well. I think that's the thing. It's, you know, like Sean said, it's that experience to recognise, there's an idea in here, this has got legs, you know, this can go somewhere.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, a younger level, often they don't have the skills to sort of develop it fully in the right way. And you need those other people around you to sort of, I suppose, slightly massage it, if you like, and collaborate on it to get it to where it needs to get to.
Yeah.
But it is a team. I mean, it's collaboration and it is team. It's very much not about the eye.
Absolutely.
In the room. And it's about how we can all, I talked about earlier, you know, it's the output. Ultimately, everyone's goal is to get a great output. How we get there as a team is the journey you go on day to day. So,
yeah, that's a good way of summing it all up. It's, can I ask you finally about tips for young designers and young people generally wanting to get into design? As you've done, Kerry, but have you got any sort of tips for people listening?
I think it is about, we've said it a little bit along the way, but it is about the connections. And yeah, Sean and I were chatting only yesterday and sort of those sliding doors moments. I think you never really know that somebody could become a friend. Actually, that connection could lead you to something else or being inspired to look into something else. And I think for me anyway, it would be about a network and trying to kind of build that network. And that network will stay with you throughout all your years. And I've probably been about 26 years now in the industry. And if I think about the people that I work with, you know, right at the beginning of my career, you know, one of them works here. So again, in terms of those people you meet and the friendship groups and those connections.
Other than Sean.
Other than Sean.
Oh, okay. Fantastic.
Yeah, it's not just Sean. I knew this person before Sean. So yeah, that's how it goes. And I think, you know,
people, it's interesting, like, actually, even at B&B, I think we do work with, you know, people from before we set up B&B. And I think sometimes it's those relationships with people that, you know, you work really well with them. And, you know, once you get that connection and that collaboration, it makes such a difference.
Yeah. And you might not work with them for years, but they might come back into your life, if you like, years later.
Definitely.
By sort of a happy accident or whatever. And then you're like, oh, yeah, I know you from then. And then somebody knows somebody and they've gone on their journey for 10, 15 years or whatever. And then you reconnect again. So I think for me, it would be about, you know, that network maybe that people have got at college or at university, and to kind of keep those connections, because you'll then make new ones. But the old ones, if you like, are still there. And it's how you kind of keep those connections throughout your career would be my sort of recommendation, really. It only by, in a way, having those maybe internships that Sean did and all those connections and the different agencies and the other connections. And I know that, you know, Sean will sort of pay it forward, if you like, now when he's interviewing people and sort of knowing, they might not be right here, but they could be right for somebody else.
Yes.
I know that the team do that. They pass on those connections and say, oh, I know somebody in that agency. They might be looking or whatever. So connections for me is the one.
I completely agree. Getting and seeing people as well, ideally face-to-face.
If you can face-to-face, I think it makes a difference. I get, you know, I've interviewed a lot of people over the years, and I think, it, you know, actually a really good interview, I find inspiring. I love meeting people. I love chatting to people about you know, their journey to date, even as a graduate, you know, where they've come from, how they've got into design and what they're passionate about. But if you get in and you get an internship, you've got to work hard. You've got to, you know, be noticed, but not in a sort of crazy wild way. I suppose it's just you know, be yourself. And it's not about just getting a brief. And for me, it was never about the best interns were not the ones that tried to solve the brief that was in the studio that they could get hold of and put the best idea down. It was the ones that actually got their head up and helped and were really, you know, really made themselves sort of valuable within the studio by sort of helping the team and getting involved with stuff rather than sort of getting their head down and thinking, right, if I do a great job on this, that I'll get rewarded for it. It's actually, I think, more about just that collaboration again. Would I would say is probably something that's quite important. you have to work hard, I think. It's hard to stand out. It's really hard to stand out now. I mean, it was never easy, actually, anyway. But I think now with email, I get a lot of emails and it's just an email message with a PDF attachment or worse, something to download with a passcode on it. I don't want too many steps, but it's hard on an email to really stand out. You really are relying on solely your work. And I think some of the best people actually are. I think I was a late developer. I don't think it was my work that got me those internships.
Yeah.
I think actually the opportunity to have face-to-face, if you can find the right companies that will do that, I think that's where you could really, you know, you can really get across your personality, how much you really, you know, passionate about stuff. It's hard on a PDF to get that across. So yeah, I think the more you can do and it's not easy, but in some ways getting those contacts is easier than it ever was, you know, getting
absolutely,
you know, it's quite,
yeah, you can find detail, out, you can find details of people, but yeah, it's how you cut through. And I think, you know, it has to be the right timing a little bit, you know, that there is a role there or, you know, an opportunity. But I think, you know, sometimes I've met people two or three times and there hadn't been a role initially, and then actually it swings back round and it's the right time, you know, to chat to them again. So again, it's keeping in touch with those people, even if you don't get the role or there isn't a role at that time, there might be a role later, and it might be that they've grown in between time, and then there's that different type of role here. There's a couple of people here that's what's happened to. I've interviewed them a couple of times and not been a role, and suddenly there was. And it's okay, this could be interesting. It's now the right time.
It's always worth it.
But yeah, it definitely is. So I don't think it's ever closed, even if you don't get, you know, a role at that time because it's one that's not available. It's about keeping in touch with that agency if you're interested in that agency.
Yeah.
Because there will be there will be the right time, hopefully.
Yeah, and that's very good advice. Thank you both. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, really good.
Thank you.
Thank you.